Ladies and mostly gentlemen, welcome to episode 60 with the very funny Matt DeZero. Now, if you never heard of Matt, get out from underneath that rock. He's been on Penn & Teller Fool Us, he's been on Just for Laughs, and he's been on other incredible, incredible stages. If you're interested in the overlap between comedy and magic, both in performance and in business, then this is going to be the episode for you. What do I mean about in business? Sort of becoming a comedy magician through the stand-up comedy circuit. So that's sort of what Matt did, and we learned quite a bit about it. So if you're interested in comedy magic, both from a performance and a business standpoint, this is the episode for you. One last thing. Next week, a couple Toronto guys are going to New York to see some shows. Darren Brown, Derek Delgadio, and Mark Correa. What that means for you is on Wednesday, May 31st, we're doing a meetup in New York. Not sure where yet, probably at a magic-centric place, like a magic shop or something, but we're going to be doing a Discourse in Magic meetup. If you are interested, stay tuned on Facebook and Insta. Otherwise, I'll see you then. Oh, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. I think you will. It was awesome.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Discourse in Magic. My name is Tyler.
My name is Jonah.
And we are here with a very special guest, as always. One week we'll have a non-special guest, but today is not that week.
This is the week.
We are here with the one and only, the very funny Matt DeZero. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you very much.
Good to hear it. Good to hear
very,
it.
Very excited to have you. And
on this lovely May day.
Yeah, it was very beautiful outside, so we decided to go inside.
There was a cat.
I smoked. I had a cigarette. That was nice.
Isn't your lady friend going to be upset hearing that? So she's not listening to this garbage.
On a national radio show, I actually said, they asked me about performing in Canada, and I go, "This, given the state of the arts in Canada, the best thing I could do for my family is to continue to smoke." So, I think she knows.
My sort of introduction to your magic or what you do in the city was James Allen's show. That was the first time I ever even heard your name. And of course, your name has spread quite a bit for a long time. I mean, you've been around longer than I've heard your name, but,
I live in the suburbs now and keep to myself. I'm the golem of magic.
So let's dive in at the beginning. How did it start? How did you get into magic?
So my uncle used to work at the sideshow at the CNE and ate fire and so forth. Took me to Morrissey Magic. That's definitely how it began. And then I never had a job after that. So this is the only job I've ever had.
I love it.
Wow.
Yeah, so 26 years now of doing just this.
I love it.
You've also been smoking for 26 years, haven't you?
Maybe more. Maybe more. So,
but know. Correlation does not equal causation.
Right.
I think you're a better act if you smoke.
I'll sort of paint the picture. You were how old when you started?
Oh, I was like 15, I guess, when I sort of started performing. Like, I had a birthday party for a physics teacher, that kind of thing.
Right. I had a birthday party for a French teacher.
Yeah, and then I met David Mary, who you probably know, and he worked at Yuck Yucks then. And he's like, "Oh, you should come to Yucks." And so I went to Yuck Yucks way before I was actually legally allowed to work there. And I started working at Yucks when I was 17. And then I spent about 8 years at Yuck Yucks. And then I moved from there to cruise ships and corporate work.
So you're almost university age training with Yuck Yucks. You went to Yuck Yuck U.
Yeah, I went to Yuck U, which was
You can swear.
Yeah, so I don't know if Yucks is the best training ground in the world. But there was a dinner theater in Toronto called Harper's, A Little Night Magic.
Yeah.
And that was the best place. Everybody got their chops. Everybody you know in the city got their chops there. And like, G. Sankey worked there, David Benn worked there, Gary Kurtz worked there. And like, my core group of friends are all from there. Yeah. And it's where I met them all and hang out with them. So that's the university, really. For $55 a night for two shows.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. How long are the sets?
Or they were like the 15 sets? Or 20 minutes.
That's not terrible then, but you still have to be there the whole time.
The Magic Castle was about to pay me $70 a show for 21 shows. Sorry, Jack, but it's true. Yeah, it's not, sometimes it's just the gig, you know, you want. And certainly, yeah, Harper's was that. So between Harper's and Yuck Yucks, it was a good place to learn.
Wow, and one of the things that that's really exciting about, even though it's totally different time, is that, like, one of the first people to sort of paint the picture of the Toronto scene lending to your development as a entertainer, you know, which we don't hear often. You know, people seem to think like, oh, I got a set and then I was doing birthday parties or whatever. And maybe that's the case for, you know, but you sort of hooked onto the establishments that exist. I'm not saying...
I bought into the system.
No, no, but I'm saying, like, you know, you were part of these establishments and you're able to say, you know, the same way that these well-known, like, improvisers and comedians now reflect on these comedy clubs in New York. And, you know, it's now the same thing. You're sort of like this magic comedy. You're saying, like, there was a place for it in Toronto, you know, and that's how this...
It was, there was not much of a place for comedy magic in Toronto. Like, the comedy clubs don't love it very much. I mean, I'm running up against that with comedy festivals right now, which you probably see me ranting about. Like, I've done a number of comedy festivals, but there's still this blowback where if you have props or you do magic, you're somehow not a comedian and they don't want you. So I spent most of my life, like, railing against that. But I like being the first variety act to get a comedy festival. It means you're plowing the road for the next guy, right? It's good. But, yeah, they don't always like magic.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I just had this conversation, if I can tell the story. I had this conversation with the booker for a national comedy festival in Canada. I don't know if I want to say her name or the festival's name, but it's a televised national show. And there's only three in Canada, so.
I know. It's pretty
narrow. It's either Winnipeg, Halifax, or Montreal. So I'm having dinner with her, and I go, what's the deal? Like, I'm about to do the festival, and I'm like, what's the deal? Why don't you have more? There's so many funny, like, magicians and jugglers, and there's a breadth of people who are not getting used. And she goes, you know what the problem is? She goes, I know you because I know you from clubs and so on that come along, but mostly, I don't know if these people are doing their own material. I don't know if they've stolen it. And she's like, so many magicians buy material or buy tricks that come with this pattern. She's like, I don't know that industry. I don't know that world. And she's like, my reputation is putting someone on television. And so what if I put someone on who's using, like, some horrible stocky lines or somebody who's doing material that maybe belongs to someone in America? I don't know. And I'm like, well, that could also happen with stand-up. And she's like, but I'm more plugged into that.
Right.
So she knows better. But it's true, like, with us.
It is true. It's also...
You don't know.
We are hacky performers.
Yeah, you watch the world of, like, America's Got Talent, and sometimes you watch somebody who, like, gets a gold buzzer who did a trick that you buy at the magic shop.
I saw a guy on there do cartoon. And I'm like, what?
People stop me on the street, and they're like, you're the magician? Oh, have you seen this? He draws on the deck, and then the guy picks the card out of a hat.
Here's $20. Go to the shop and buy it. Like, oh, yeah. So this is the problem, right? So I have sympathy for that festival booker. Because she's got to make decisions. And I'm like, yeah, it's hard. And then, like, I go out and I showcase. There's another festival. I showcase and I kill. They write a letter to my manager. And she's like, it's really nice to see a variety act get some respect and actually deserve it. His tone or presence or something sets him apart from the rest. But in the next sentence, she's like, but I can't use him at the festival. And then she's like, we get into it more. And they're like, well, CBC doesn't know how to shoot variety. And I go, oh, that's no problem. I can give them a shot list. And they go, oh, no, you can't tell CBC how to do their job. And I'm like, but they just said they don't know how to do their job. So, like, they're obviously coming up with reasons just not to have variety. And there's, like in magic, you know, there's, like, little cliques. It's worse with comics. If there's a clique of comics that are friends with the booker, you know what I mean, then they're not going to have you because they're like, oh, magic, poo-poo.
Right.
But it's changing, I've noticed. Like, the next generation younger guys seem to be more inclusive of magic. So when my generation dies, thank God, and we'll do that from smoking. You guys have a better... I'm smoking for your benefit.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're paving the way for variety acts and killing yourself with cigarettes.
That's the best thing I can do for my family. I feel like it'll be better as time goes on, but it's hard now, right?
Yeah, and it's also... I mean, now's the world where people are finding their audiences from... their basements.
Yeah.
Hence this podcast. But
you don't need the clubs anymore. You don't... I saw Patton Oswalt, he did the State of the Industry address. He holds up his iPhone and he's like, I have more technology here than they had to make Citizen Kane. Like, Orson Welles didn't have this much technology. Like, I don't need the gatekeepers anymore. And it is kind of true. Like,
yeah,
you don't... And I've spent most of my career chasing TV, right? Because I was like, I want TV. You don't need it anymore. Matter of fact, like, I'm amazed how many people don't watch shows that I'm on. I'm like, you really didn't see it? It's like a national show. And
they're like, no, I watch TV, dude.
Last week, I got introduced at this theater, and they're like, you know, appeared on Penn and Teller's Fool Us. And then afterwards, people were coming up to me. I'm having my smoke. Sorry, Casey. Having my smoke, and people are like, what is that show you're talking about? What? I don't know that. And I'm like, yeah.
I crazy. I mean, even that was crazy. That's on YouTube, and that gets a little bit of a spread. But, I mean, anything that's television-based, I mean, you get
When was the last time you watched a comedy show on CBC, right?
I don't remember the last time. Like, it's been over a year since I've watched anything live on television aside from sports, right?
Yeah, myself included.
So
I'm part of the problem.
but it's funny, and you also
think about... What the fuck am I going to do? Sit through commercials just to support a dying industry? Like, I don't fucking care.
We joked about it
in an industry that doesn't support me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I really feel that. I'm like, well, if I'm not supporting... I will gladly torrent your shit because you're not supporting me at all. I will take revenue from you.
We joked about it on Justin Willman that it's kind of like... You want a clip on a morning news show so that you can pull it and put it on your YouTube feed. Like, it'll do more damage for people online to see that you were on TV than the damage that it actually does on TV.
Yeah, it's true. I was up for this
damage in a good
I was up for
way.
This TV show. Like, I can say because I'm not doing it. So I was up for this Showtime with the Apollo, right? I was going to be on that show. And I was calling one of my friends, Kenny Robinson, hosts the Nubian show here in Toronto, the all-black comedy show. And I'm like, Kenny, man, I'm a white guy who does magic. How am I going to do in Harlem for like an all-black? I'm like, you need to tell me because I don't want to die on national TV. And he's like, what are you talking about? If you really die, it's not going to go to air. And if you do die and it goes to air, that audience isn't going to book you anyway.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go do the show.
I'll just do it exactly as I planned.
Yeah. So... Yeah, TV becomes less and less important except for to fill YouTube space.
Yeah.
And even Fool Us, like, I got up to, like, 200,000 hits or something, and at 42 years old, I go, oh, my God, I'm, like, the king. And then I run into Wes Barker at a hotel, and I'm like, hey, man, I got, like, 20,000 hits or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I got 20 million. I go, oh, okay, I'll go back to the cave now.
Yeah.
So
do you know what the difference is? Wes proves an outlandish amount of online content.
Yeah, I don't put hardly any.
But that's the thing. So without any work, someone put a thing with your name on it of footage, and you got 200,000 people to watch it. Wes probing at it weekly, bringing people into his feed. You know, like and it's interesting. We're talking about television, like you said, you spent so long trying to get into television. The people now, when they start, they're like the days that they put into getting onto internet, they're there. They're there. There's no gatekeepers, like you said. Like, there's no. Yeah. So they're just.
And you know what's interesting? This is how it used to be just coming out of vaudeville. Like, Rat Pack guys, if you watch like any of that era, you can tell they're doing TV, even Elvis in the beginning. You can tell they're doing TV, but they don't really care about it because they're more concerned about the live show. Yeah. And maybe TV will feed their live show. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But that's not the thing. And then there was like a hunk of time when it was the only thing, and now it's kind of come full circle again, and people are like, yeah, whatever. And I do, like... Yeah, I don't need my mother's justification. Yeah. Like, hey, mom, I'm on TV. I don't care. Neither does she. So, I don't think TV is worth it anymore. Or not as much worth it anymore, I don't think.
So,
and I'm not a magician's magician, so I don't. Yeah. I'm not going to try and get magic acts to be like, oh, look at him, he's so good.
Right. Yeah.
I've gone incredibly far. Magician, right? I've become incredibly far on very little talent. Almost none.
I really respect that in a performer because it shows that you are a performer. You know what I mean? Like, people who aren't technical wizards, but they come out and they whip up an audience and they, you know, they...
Like the best acts have one act. You know, like, the best, like, speakers have their speech. You know, the best... So, it's funny. I joke about the fact that, you know, the best magicians of the world... Like, the most entertaining, charismatic people on stage is picked from the pool of nerds that got into magic because they like sitting at home reading from a book, flipping around cards in their hands.
True.
So it's like, really, is that the best pool of people that we should be pulling the most charismatic, entertaining? The joke is kind of like that we were sold the other side of the dream. We thought we were going to be doing magic tricks, but we realized that really, it was a one-hour act that we're looking for. That's it.
Yeah. And even, right? It's funny. Like, Canada's the only place I can think of, really, where they ask for even an hour. Like, headline time in the UK is 25 minutes.
Wow.
And it's because less is more everywhere but here, right? Like,
yeah.
Here it's just like, give us more for less. but like, I also find too, the best acts, like the charismatic ones, I've noticed over my career, the best acts, and this seems to be true of almost any act, like juggler, magician, what have you, the ones who are the most obsessed with it are the better ones. Mm-hmm. Like, two of my best friends in this industry are obsessed with magic to the point that to the exclusion of the rest of the world almost. Right. They were just out after a show and a really well-known actor was invited up to dinner with them. And he's like, yeah, so are you an actress or what are you doing in New York? And she's like, yeah, I'm an actress. He's like, oh, are you on Broadway or something? And it's, you know, and it's like a really famous movie star, but he's obsessed with magic too much to know. I'm like, oh my God. So, but they're also, they happen to be the best acts in the world. Yeah. Right? So
let's talk comedy. We had earlier in the days of this episode, we had on Mark Correa, who's my current roommate. And we were blown away by how people loved and were so interested in adding comedy to their act.
Yeah, because everybody thinks it's easy.
Right. So let's dive in. Let's say someone has, or I mean, I'll talk for myself. Like, the first time I did my script, I went out there, I did my act, and I went down and I said, you know, aside from all the reasons that it sucked, like, it wasn't funny. And all the jokes that I wrote, I mean, they felt like these formulaic, like, 1-2, joke on the third, 1-2. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing, right? So I go out there and I go, what am I doing? What? So what does someone do? How does someone make their act funny?
To my own demise sometimes, I feel like the best acts, I think if you think it's funny, it probably is. Now it's just an issue of writing.
Right.
So have you edited enough? Have you, editing and timing make all the difference in the world. So if you think it's funny, it probably is. And also, I find I'm not a big fan of characters so much on stage. So I'm like, more the closer you get to the bone of who you really are, the more that'll help. So maybe the audience doesn't find it funny because they're not sensing it to be true in you. So maybe that's why. But magic is weird because it's hard to be like, I have friends who can talk about like their IBS on stage or whatever. You know, I got this whatever neuralgia, whatever. Yeah. But magic, you got these props. You got to work with the jokes. Have to work within the thing.
Yeah, you're like, you're presenting a thing, you know, it's very much like...
Here's my diorama.
These are the jokes. It's very much like diorama. A presentation, yeah, or like
exactly.
A
excellent way to say it. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Right. It's totally... But then the problem is now, as comedy progresses, it's less and less about set a punch.
Right.
And it's more about, like, the audience wants to know about you. So now the problem is, how do I talk about me and my experiences in life using magic? Without it seeming hokey, which is like near to impossible.
Yeah.
So I remain set up punch one-liner kind of guy.
Like, and I've yet to solve that problem, still with the old...
I don't think anyone will ever solve that problem. Like, who are the best comedy magicians in the world that would appeal to an audience today? Johnny Thompson's hilarious. I don't know if he'd appeal to an audience today. Amazing Jonathan, maybe. But he's not, you know, he's kind of different, right? Yeah. So comedy... I don't know, if you took Matt King out of his crowd in Vegas, I don't know, I'm sure he would kill.
You're like, Matt King is
what am I saying?
I've never seen Matt King.
Me either.
Yeah, never seen him on television.
Let's all go.
I've seen
his rope trick.
Yeah, everyone says he's great, flawless, and a million like callbacks and stuff, but yeah, there's this technique to writing jokes, right? Like, there is formula involved, so like, I don't know what joke's not working for you, but you know, if we sat down for 10 minutes, we could figure it out.
So let's say somebody at home is like, they want to start being funnier on stage. What does one do? I know it's not as easy as being like, oh, I'll just sprinkle comedy in it.
Well, here's what you don't do. Don't go to school. Don't go to a stupid comedy school. What a waste of money. Seinfeld's got a great line. He goes, you know those comedy schools? Because he's like against them, right? He's like, you know those comedy schools? A big banner should just drop down the first day of the school. It says, go out and work. And it's like... It's true, because the only way you're going to find yourself is by doing a million shows. The bookers at Yuck Yucks used to tell me they won't hire anyone unless they've done 6 years in. Because you're just not any good, because you need stage time. And then just be yourself. Like, if you're naturally funny, play to your strengths. If you're naturally funny, then do that on stage. But if you're Captain Serious or morose, I don't know, you don't want to be...
Yeah.
Good luck trying to be
trying to be funny for the first time.
Yeah, be yourself and talk about what you think is funny. Like, I'm a big... If you think it's... I have a joke in my act that everyone hates, including the audiences a lot of times, and I will not let it go. Like, I just refuse to drop it. And now it's like maybe 60% of the time it's working as opposed to it used to be maybe 30.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I will just keep hammering this until I get the wording right, until I get the timing right. There will be and so I'm like a big proponent of, if you think it's funny,
just... It probably is.
It probably is, yeah.
So for someone who doesn't have 6 years of stage time under their belt...
Open mics. And right. My friend John Wing, who's like a great comedian, like 6 times on The Tonight Show. So you know he's a writer. It's a great line. Produce. Write every day. Because you got to write 100 jokes to get one good one.
Yeah.
Might as well write them now.
Yeah. You know, might as well start writing.
Start writing. And then your mind gets into the habit of... Like, I'm amazed when I was just stuck on a line the other day and I called Dave Merrion. It was fixed. I'm like, yeah, because he's just more in shape. Like I don't run 5 kilometers anymore, right. So I'm fat, right? So I don't write, like, every day like I used to, so I'm joke fat. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But when you're writing every day, so that's, yeah, like, keep writing stuff and then just workshop. Like, go out to open mics. That's what they're... You need a place to be bad.
That's really what they're there for.
And that's what they're there for, yeah. People are paying to see... Like, if somebody wants to pay to see Chris Rock, then they'll pay their $75.
Yeah.
But if they want to go see open mic and see what's new, and then also it allows you to not be the same as everyone else.
Right.
Which is awesome. Like, open mics give you that luxury. Whereas when you have I have a mortgage, a kid, and a wife, like, I can't afford the luxury of going, I want to do a Fringe play about how William Burroughs shot the apple on his wife's shoulder, which I would love to do, but I don't have the time to be able to do it.
Right.
So when you're young and you're just starting out, take the opportunity, man. And like, this is where I say Harper's was a good place to be bad. For $55 a night, hey, Steve Elias, if you're listening, I know I suck. Tough beans, but got my chops, but I learned to deliver a joke,
right?
And then the other thing is, I always say, because I was lucky, like, Harper's, Yucks, all my peer groups are about 10, 15 years older than me, always have conversations, like, up, right? So hang around the older comics who know what they're doing. And then you go, hey, man. And now, comics don't hate you as much because you're a variety act.
Right.
So, you know, you get to go, hey, I'm working on this thing. Can you help me? They will. They always will.
Yeah.
Well, it's something we learned with this podcast, and we mentioned it 100 times. Like, if ask the higher-ups in your art form questions, they'll answer them, right?
Yeah, yeah. Plus, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
And no one can solve this industry on their own. No, like, it's impossible.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. Well, my God, I don't even want to imagine trying to tackle anything on my own. And as I said to you earlier, all the best stuff I've had in my career comes from friends.
Yeah.
Everything. Every great TV spot, I've wanted my whole life to work the Magic Castle. I got it because friends, mostly.
Right.
You know?
Be nice to people is the point of that.
Always be nice. I don't see any upside to being an asshole.
No.
Like, I don't know why people are like that. And there's one magician in town who's an unbelievable douchebag. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And I just, I don't care if you're the best magician in the world. If you're a douchebag, no one's going to want to hang out with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad karma.
Speaking of assholes, not to talk more shit about local Toronto magicians, how do you deal with sucking? You know what I mean? Like you said that you knew you sucked for the first few years of your life, right?
So I continue to suck. I market it.
So how do you deal with negative feedback? How do you deal with hecklers? How do you deal with that?
Right. So, well, now I always say, for like the last 10 years ago, apathy is my sword and shield. So, like, not caring has made me funnier on stage. And then it's also helped me when things go bad. As soon as I walk out the door, it's forgotten.
Right.
Like, I go, well, there'll be another show. Hecklers, I don't have that. It's a facility to deal with hecklers. But the one upside to magic is it does not usually inspire hecklers unless you're really crap. Right? But it doesn't usually inspire. Like, you probably noticed at your own shows, right? At David Buster's or whatever. There's something about magic, I think, because it's nice and convivial, and it's not. There's no anger attached to it, but there's also no point of view. But it doesn't inspire hecklers, so it's not really my thing. I've had hecklers, of course, at Yucks, but I just repeat what they, because some people heckle. Here's the big technique to hecklers, which I'm sure you've heard on your podcast, and I'm probably duplicating what other people have said, but it is true and bears repeating. Repeat what the guy says because the rest of the audience can't hear it. And then keep talking to them. If you stay calm, eventually something funny, you will come up with something funny. You're funnier than them. Be calm. Keep talking. They will say something and then you will get a comeback. Just don't freak out. Engage them. And then, yeah, you'll win every time.
But you know, we've never heard that. And that's actually a really good way to stay calm on stage. I love that. Yeah. You're funnier than them. Just say it again. I mean, you're buying yourself more time. Everyone in the audience will be able to hear it. You basically have twice as many kicks as the can as they do because they say it. Then you think about it. Then you repeat it. Then you have time.
But that's what the repeating does, right? Repeating whatever they say gives you that 2 seconds to be like a step ahead of them. Yeah. And like Mike Bullard is the best, maybe in North America at this. I've never seen a guy who never writes anything and comes up on stage completely unscripted and kills, just destroys. And I've noticed over the years watching Mike, calmness, confidence, repeat what they say, know you're going to be funnier than them, and just stick handle back and forth. Yeah. Like every line you say back to them doesn't have to be funny. All you need is one big line and then you can move on.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, like that's, but in terms of negative feedback, like I actually like the negative feedback. And sometimes I want it because I hate myself. Like,
don't we all as magicians anyway?
Yeah. I think
that's a whole other magic, podcast.
Yeah, but I was gonna say, I think magic has actually given me terrible self confidence problems. But I'm
I love that we're all just like, yep.
Yeah.
100%. That's true. No self worth. Okay.
Well everyone glossing over, like, how'd you get into magic? Like, I got into, like, talk to people. They're like, oh, good.
Like, whether or not I could fool them with my hands was my only value as a human at the time.
Look at my hands. Right at my face.
Don't look at my face or body, please.
Look, I'm sitting here with a pillow over my stomach because I'm sure I'm too fat to quit smoking or trying to. So that I look for the negative. Like, it was really... So, I was very fortunate to get Foolus, right?
Yeah.
This is a perfect example of that. I'm super fortunate to get Foolus. Do I deserve it? No. Way better acts than we did, but I was very lucky to be on it. Did I have a good spot? I had a medium spot. Like, I didn't kill. It was okay, but I didn't kill for a host of other reasons I won't get into. So, but everyone was like saying nice things, like, oh, great spot. This tape's going to do well for you, all this stuff. And I got a lot of great work out of it. But all I really wanted were people to go, okay, this is sucks. And here's
why.
Yeah, I need someone to go, okay. And thank God, two of my closest friends actually were good at that, and they're really good acts. And they're like, "Yeah, okay, here's you got problems." I'm always looking for the negative because, like I think I said to you earlier, you never learn anything when you kill.
No,
when I get a standing O on a cruise ship, I walk away going, well, "I didn't learn, nothing."
Well, that felt good, but I'm no better.
Yeah. So
what's
looking,
my next step now? Like, wouldn't you rather do it again?
But so I don't want. I won't take advice from everybody. They got to be a certain type of act or somebody that I know, but I don't want them just to say positive things. And then everybody else, like if the Evisons, who are close friends, said something to me where, like, your act is shit, here's what you got to fix. Yeah, 100%. Or David Banner. There's all these guys. But if it was just somebody that I had never met, yeah, go fuck yourself. Like, I honestly don't care.
Right.
And I just tune it out. So that's the way I deal with it, which might be, maybe I'm an asshole. I don't know.
Well, I think it's along the same lines as before, as like taking the advice from people that are steps ahead of you. Someone said it on the podcast, I don't even remember who, maybe it was elsewhere, but you only take advice from people who are in a position where you'd like to be.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so awesome because you realize you're like, wait, what am I taking advice from people who are not?
Well, it'd be like, hey, I need some help with a diagonal palm shift. And you go, yeah, I can help you. And I go, do you do it? And you go, no.
No, not at all.
Not at all, but I've read about it.
Right, but, so,
I've observed people do it. Yeah. So maybe it's like that. But I'm just picky about it. But I have, like I said, that core group of friends. Very lucky at a young age. Core group of friends who I think are really good performers, like Glenn Ottaway, Wes Eric, these guys. So I just go to them. So it's nice. I have my own Ask Alexander for comedy and magic, right? And I just go to those guys, and I'm like, can I help? I need help.
And it helps so much to have, have a community and have a team to help. Because we're putting together, like I mentioned, like, an act. You know, because, like, it comes to putting together an act, maybe two act if you're crazy and feeling dangerous. Like, bringing in all of the heavy machinery you can to make that act great is what you want to do. Yeah. You got to call up your friend who is really good at this, who you say, please, I need you to watch my show and tell me what sucks because I need it to be great.
Yeah,
and then you call your tech guy and you want every part of it to be perfect because...
And that's helped more than anything. The camera. Oh, the ability to... Because I started in 91.
I can't stand watching myself.
I know, me neither. I still don't like it. But, you know, so then video cameras were crazy expensive. So I needed to have friends come and watch me. But now I can set up the camera at the back of the room and I get to watch and I go, oh, this is awful. So there is that usefulness.
It's so powerful to be able to, like, leave. One of my favorites is when I leave and I feel like I bombed, I always feel less bad when I watch the footage. Like, if I feel that I did really good, when I watch the footage, I go, I didn't really do that good. But when I feel like I bombed, I watch the footage, I'm like, you know what? Bad. These people were smiling. They were laughing a little bit. They were... So, it's interesting.
And then you go, okay, but that pickup was slow.
Right.
I could have done this better.
And you do, awesome. You absolutely see the moments, and you're like, oh, like, he literally whispered that he knew how the trick was done right there. Or like...
Yeah, and you know what? So, comics know this intuitively from the very beginning, but I find magicians don't know this. So, the way to deliver a joke, watch Chris Rock. He's the master. You can pace on the setup, but you must stop on the punchline. No movement on the punchline. Right? Magicians are all over the place, and they don't know, like, stop on the punchline.
So give us an example. It says people at home that are comedy blind, and they barely even know what the word punchline means.
Oh, so, here, look, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, a joke where, because it's visual, you need to see somebody walking around. So the setup, here, the oldest joke, you know, take my wife, please, the oldest joke. Mm-hmm. You can walk on, take my wife, but... Please is the punchline.
Right.
You need to stop on like stop on the punchline, right? Like because what happens is you want I always liken it to like painting a picture kind of. So I want the only way to get a laugh is for everyone to see the exact same picture that you've painted, right? So if you see something and you see something different than I'm saying, if you interpret it differently, it won't get a laugh. And part of what makes it gel together is you have to stop movement on it, right? And this is why, like, you know, you edit out superfluous lines and stuff because you want people to just... I want them to see polar bear with blue eyes.
Right.
That's it. I don't want fat, chubby polar bear.
Right.
Cut out fat and chubby. Cause it's, you know, and then stop movement on the punchline. I don't understand why people... This guy we were talking about earlier does it all the time and it drives me crazy. And I'm like, just stop moving. Stop. Right. And you'll get a laugh. And that could be, you know, earlier you said I'm having a problem with some joke. Yeah. Like, it could be something literally as simple as that.
As, like, where and when the exact punchline lands.
There's always a funny word in a joke. You got to find that funny word. Like, Derek, you know Derek Edwards, considered Canada's best comedian, right? The line about Derek is, he could read the back of a cereal box and it would be funny. Right. It is kind of true. And he's got this joke where he goes, you know, my wife and I don't do his voice very well, so I'm sorry, Derek, if you're here. My wife and I are down in... My wife and I are down in Niagara Falls, and we're walking up Clifton Hill, and we wonder if there's a place where we could get a trinket, or a keepsake, perhaps. Right? And it's like...
It's already funny.
Keepsake is the funny word, right. And it's absurd, because Clifton Hill is nothing but junk to buy. But keepsake is the funny word. Derek understands that keepsake is the funny word. He puts it at the end.
Right. So what I was going to say is, like, I know two rules about writing comedy. The first is... The rule of three, and the second is you put the most powerful word or line or thing at the end. That's what I know, right? So it's like, so
rule of three is changing up now too, right? There's four beat. There's all sorts of other things.
So my question is, what other basic tool belt can you give me? Like, I know it's crazy, but
find the funny word. Like I haven't. So I have this thing where in my act where something screws up, and I've got all these like a prop in my hand, and I sort of throw it and I go, you know. I go, Matt DeCero, and there's movement on the word. So it looks like it fucks up. I go, Matt DeCero, and then I stop all movement. I go, when you can't afford the best, right? So, like, always, whenever the punchline is, don't move. That's, like, a big thing.
Right.
Move around the stage. Fill the stage, but try and keep your... Like, watch Chris Rock, and he'll repeat bigger the audience, right? Repeat the punchline or the setup a couple of times.
Right.
He paces, he sets, and then, boom, he stops. Like, watch those guys.
So that's interesting what you're saying, because you said earlier, you know, it's about everyone being on the same page as you, which sort of lends to being about clarity. And then, you know, you're saying, like, he sets up the thing multiple times. So, you know, almost the point, like, I'm sort of combining the things you're saying. Like, you think a joke is funny, or you think something is funny. What you have to do is make sure that the whole audience is on board with the premise so that you can take them home on that punchline.
So you just said it better than I ever could.
I'm trying to summarize it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's exactly right. So this is why I mean, like, paint the picture, paint all that landscape in the setup.
Right.
And then for the punchline, everybody gels and gets that at the same time. Right.
I love just the pacing thing is such a huge...
It's
huge
a big,
thing,
big deal. And I think
something I've noticed, like, working with James especially, is, like... The change, like, not from the comedy in the show, but, like, just the small changes in the atmosphere of the room really affect with the audience. Like, sure, we change the music and we turn the lights down a little, and then the whole audience is like, oh, show's starting.
People don't understand. Here's a comedy tip, but I don't think people understand for magic, for sure, but for comedy, conditions mean everything. So the best comedy clubs, for example, have nothing on the walls. There's just a stage, and that's it, because there's nothing to draw your attention, right? And then, you know, dark house, brighter on stage. Those things help. Low ceiling up, high ceiling. I once performed at CBC's atrium. It's 15 stories tall, and it's a big tube. The laugh just goes up. They lose it, right? Like, this is why the best rooms are low ceilings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like...
club basements. That's...
For some reason, yeah, they're better. But, like, and theaters, of course. Yeah, I mean, sure, connection. Like, I don't, this is another, like, I hate the 50-foot of dance floor. I always gripe about that.
Yeah.
And now it's in my rider, and I avoid, like, I won't go on stage because you can't connect with the audience if they're too far away.
Crazy. You're, like, working.
Yeah, it's like working across a baseball diamond or something. And I don't like that. So, but you can't be funny. Like, I always go, you could put Robin Williams in here, and he's not going to do well. And
well, not anymore.
Not anymore. No. Well, he's got a shot. If anybody had a shot of being funny from the grave, it's Robin Williams.
True.
But I feel like buyer agents even sometimes just don't get it. And they're like, well, I don't know. Why didn't you do well? I'm like, because you didn't do your job setting up this room properly. I remember David Benn always told me he hires someone and like they'll remove or not remove. They'll replace the seating order in a corporate event to suit his show. And like he'll physically get someone to move the tables staff won't, because it's all to serve the show.
What are some of the other like necessities in your rider? Like, I'm sure there's things that you probably could live without if you had to, but just don't want to anymore. So like, what would you say?
My rider's basic, right? It's just on after. Another key thing for anybody who's listening, who's about to go into the world of corporate, which I now inhabit and have done for a long time, get on immediately after dinner, never on after awards, never on after it must go dinner, dessert, your show, then all the other crap.
Then there's stuff.
And they'll say, this happened to me just on the weekend. Oh, our guys will stick around. No, they won't. Just shut up. You're wrong. And then I got
speeches and awards are enough.
Like, yeah, I got serious blowback from this woman, and she's like, no, my guys will stick around. I go, look, you're a nurse. I don't tell you how to, no offense, but I don't tell you how to stitch a wound. You're hiring me because I'm a professional. You got to listen to me on this. You want your entertainment dollars spent correctly? This is how you have to do it. And sure enough, they did it my way, and it worked.
And it worked.
And it worked, and I got an encore. And you're like, that would not have happened because half the people would have got up and left. And so, yeah, get on. You have to get on after dessert. And I usually say, let them, because you know how fast you can eat dessert? I go, let them plate the dessert, and then I just go on stage. Don't clear. Yeah. No clearing, because then there's distraction. But as with respect to your question in the rider, I just want microphone on a stand. I don't like the lav mics or anything, because I'm old and I'm used to. Just an old man.
You were raised in a comedy club.
Yeah, I was raised in a comedy club. So I'm an old,
you went to Yuck old You or whatever.
I'm an old piece of shit ass. He just wants his microphone
and a stand. And I hate myself.
I just want a mic, a stand, a light bulb, and my self-loathing. That's all I want. I get up and I do the 2 minute take. So, so what I asked from the rider. So the no 50 feet of dance floor, on after dessert, I go, that's it. Microphone, stand, no podium. Mm. I hate the podium for some reason.
It's a barrier.
And also, I can't work can't see, but I can't work off to the side. Like, the microphone is attached to the podium. I need to move around.
Right. You're also not delivering an address, right?
So, however, I saw James Allen use a lav mic, and for the first time I realized it affords you a tremendous amount of movement that I never...
Oh, yeah.
I just haven't considered
it.
I should probably
start. Want.
Yeah, I should probably start trying to adopt it. But then there's feedback. Hands, right? Like, the reality is, we don't always work in great conditions. And sometimes the room is shaped like a rhombus. And then, you know what I mean? the belt pack feeds back because the way the speakers are, whereas a mic on a stand doesn't. So I'm out because... I think the best book
but that's only because you're limited. Like, if you wanted to walk out into the audience with a mic on the stand, you could still get feedback in a rhombus-shaped room, but you're just not going to be doing that.
I've never had to have somebody EQ out the mic on a stand,
I have with
a belt pack. Be seen, be heard, right? This is, I was going to say the two best, if I could recommend two books about comedy and magic, David Benn's book, Tricks, because in it he's got great advice about things like Be Seen, Be Heard. And Jay Sankey's book, Zen and the Art of Stand-Up Comedy. You want to learn, like, you know what a great piece of advice that I got from Jay was from that book that I 15, 20 years in at this point that I'd never known. Drink warm water before you go on stage. Cold water is bad for your vocal cords. It's true.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like a little tip. That tip alone is worth the book.
Jeez.
Like, and it's filled with gems like that.
Because that fucking affects me. You know what I mean? I get out there, I'm either salivating like crazy or I have terrible dry mouth and it's like, yeah.
You know what I learned too? You got to watch, now that I'm working theaters more, you know sometimes they miss the stage so the lights cut through? This happened to me on Foolish. The guy ahead of me taped with some lights and shit. And I walked out and I actually had a hard time catching my breath while I was taping. I'm like I had to take big breaths because I was, and I, in about the first 20 seconds of my spot, I was like, oh my God, smoking caught up to me. And it caught up to me on this
right
fucking
now.
Show.
Am I
getting emphysema in front of Penn and Teller? Jesus, this sucks. And then I realized, oh my God, it's the mist. So you got to watch that kind of stuff too and ask.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's for down the line with theaters and crap like that.
One of the things you were mentioning is doing comedy magic in corporate environments. One of the things about comedy, more so than magic, is it's very authentic. You know what I mean? Like someone is going on stage and sharing their point of view in hopes to be funny.
You mean stand-up?
Yeah. Whereas in magic, I mean, the magic works, you know? And like, of course you can do a trick and people will know how it works, possibly, but
it's my whole show, baby.
But most magic, you know, is designed. Most people that are going on stage are not the ones designing the tricks. That's and the true. Tricks that are designed to work. Whereas comedy, you know, you write it yourself, you go out there, they're not designed to do anything. It's only gonna be designed to joke. So my question is almost about the confidence of going out there and delivering jokes. I feel like is a more difficult one to hold on to than it is a comedist to go out there and deliver a trick which you know works in
right.
the end.
But it's sort of like, you ever work on a new sleight and the first time you put a sleight into your act on stage, you're like,
fair.
Man, I'm working on Shimada's cane appearance right now in The Knot, and I did it the first time at a pot bar because it's a comedy club, and I'm like, there's no risk here. I will do it. Yeah, green room. Sorry, 420. Anyway, point is, even though they're all high, I'm like, they can see this cane in my hand.
Yeah.
I know. How could I not feel guilty? Mm-hmm. But yet, I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, that comes into it a little bit. It's funny what you said, though. That's basically what that booker from the comedy festival was saying, right? Comedians write their stuff. They develop it over all this time.
Right. Magic
Magicians
is made.
Just go and buy this trick. And I don't know. The booker's like, I don't know. Did he come up with it himself?
It's actually a very big, you know, distinction is like, nobody is like, I want to be a magician. And they're like, okay, figure it out. Like, make your own appearing.
And the ones that do are names like Kalen Morelli, who decide that he wants to put out a new idea every day. And then he's working with David Copperfield because someone's like, hey, there's only one kid in this entire world right now who's creating at a rate that's
magic.
Right.
That's right.
Well, Weber is a genius.
But I'm just saying, like, that's how, like, it evolves because one person decides that, you know, being creative instead of pulling.
So an agent in California who's my really close friend and my agent, I'm having this conversation with him like last week. He goes, you know what the best thing for your industry would be? Close all magic shops. And I'm like, what the fuck? And he goes, the problem is you guys all buy the same shit. And then, so think about this. So he's a comic, but he owns an agency. So he has the eye of a booker too. And he books all my cruise work. He's like, here's the thing. You guys all do the same shit. I won't, he goes, if I see, there's certain tricks if I see, I won't book them. He goes, if you make it snow, if you make a bowling ball appear, if you get out of a straitjacket, I will not hire you. And I'm like, yeah, that's really interesting, man. And I've known him for so long and he's never said that. But
what do you do on a cruise ship? You make a balloon.
Well,
you make a bowling ball pull out of the thing. Like,
it used to be I'd get onto a ship and I'd be like, who was here last week? And the cruise director wouldn't know, but they would describe his act. And I'd go, oh, Martin Lewis was here. Awesome. Now he goes, I don't know, some guy who did some balloon animals and then he made a bowling ball appear and he made this, it made it snow
really?
And the stage was a fucking mess. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Did confetti come out of a fan?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it could be anybody. But if somebody goes, if a cruise director says, the guy here last week had all these spring snakes and they appeared, I go, oh, Eric Buss was here.
Right, right.
So,
you know,
yeah, like that's
that pops.
Yeah. Like bubble wrap. Yeah. And so that's what you want. But to that point, I think this agent's comment is correct. The wholesaling of the same magic tricks is maybe not helping anything. Maybe we would all be better off coming up with stuff. But in my whole career, I've come up with two things. My opener and my closer.
But this is the thing. The thing is, like, we talked about it, like, we're putting together a one-hour show. So if in your whole entire career you come up with one thing...
Well, I'm
lazy. I mean, what the... No, but I'm saying, like, I mean, that sounds about right. Like, what's the... You've got a whole career. Maybe you're going to come up with... I mean, let's say, ideally, you've got seven tricks in your set. You come up with 20 in your whole career and seven end up in your set. Like,
But that's the way it used to be. Like, and this is why magicians like Fantasio and all these guys, they would work their whole careers and then they would lecture. Because the best... Now you got guys who are 20 and they're lecturing, and I'm like, what the fuck? You haven't...
What are you lecturing
about? What do you got? Nothing to say. You haven't worked enough. So, but I used to feel like that too. Like I used to go, well, you know, in your whole career, if you only come up with seven things, and then I started realizing, all my favorite bands put out an album like every year. Mm-hmm. My friend Sandra Shamus has written 3 90-minute shows in a six-year span.
Wow.
Eric Bogosian, famous one-man show. I don't know, he put out 4 or 5, like... Just got to write, and this is where it comes back to produce,
right.
Which is where it comes back to me being a lazy bastard who's not writing enough.
Well, I mean,
it's because I'm dealing with horrible depression that magic gave me.
It's, I mean, the best comedians say it, like I mean, Louis C.K. and George Carlin. You know, they both are like, scrap everything and start again as soon as you.
I think that's not unwise, and you know what's interesting? Canadian comedy on Canadian TV. Actually age that. So if I do the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, that piece, I cannot do it on Canadian television anymore.
Right.
CBC's not going to allow it. And at first I was like, what? I can't cannibalize shit? Like, so television is a furnace for material. Like, the thing I did on Foolish, can't do it anywhere else now, right? Winnipeg, same thing. So, but in a way it's good because now you're forced to come up with new stuff.
It's what happens on a smaller scale. It's what happens to me with camps. I do the tours to often the same camps year after year doing shows, and I have to come up with a whole new act. And
like an hour each year?
Yeah. So I used to, I mean, first my approach was like, this was really good. And then I sort of went like, isn't the best thing I should be doing to putting together like one great show? Like, isn't this kind of hindering my growth? And then now I'm returning back to going, this is awesome. Everyone else I know, like I've re-evolved myself multiple times in the last 5 years and trying to find
yourself.
And I'm able to do it at a faster rate because I know I have to bring new material. And
so this happened, again, I'm lazy, so I'm not following this advice because I just got too many other problems. I haven't slept in 2 years for my kid, right? But I got unbelievably lucky and I got to open for Drew Carey twice.
Wow.
And on the second night, go out for drinks and we're talking, or like to his host, tell him, you know, go out. But he said something I found profoundly motivating until I got home and started drinking again. But he goes, because I'm like, oh my God, a new hour every year. Like, your crew, I was like, your crew, your generation is like, they're machines. Like, Seinfeld's writing new stuff, all these guys. And he goes, well, yeah, like an hour is like a ton of new material every year. And he goes, can you write a minute a week? And yeah. He goes, well, 52 weeks in a year, 1 minute, there's your hour. Write a minute a week, and in a year you'll have. And I'm like,
wow,
yeah, I'm a lazy fuck. Wow, and he's totally right.
For sure.
That's the every time I speak to someone who's at a level that I strive for, they're like, "Oh, you're just not working hard enough." And I go, "Fuck,
yeah,
it is
every
true.
It is true. You know, like it seems to be true over and over again that like it's exactly what you just said. It's like you think about." Like, nobody got to be the best in the world without working like a dog. It's just nobody. No one you know.
And show business is, like, all-encompassing. Show business is literally, like, I booked a gig last night at 11 at night while I was having a drink and a smoke at my neighbor's garage. I'm like, and I came back to Casey. I get into bed and I'm like, I just worked at 11. This is ridiculous. Yeah. But it's never...
Apparently, Kevin Hart is, like, a monster to be around because he's just so go, go, go.
Guys, like, occasionally I'll get to work at Comedy Cellar or, like, do spots at the Comedy Cellar in New York or whatever. Yeah. And that's where you see these guys, like, Rock will come in and workshop stuff. And you go, wow, you're unbelievably famous. You're easily the funniest comic in the world. And you're still working out 4 or 5 times a week because you got to be good.
Yeah.
I'm not bad. And Toronto, we're really lucky in Toronto. When I started in like 91, the comedy section in the Now magazine, this local newspaper, was about this big, like a paragraph, and that was all the venues. And now it's two pages. Provided you don't care about getting paid, you could literally do two spots a night every night of the week.
Well, that's what, I mean, that's, and even for Magic, right? We're trying to help that exist with Toronto Magic.
Yeah, that's great.
And like, it's just, for me, I graduated Queens last year with a degree in math. I went later in the city. It took 6 months between Dave and Buster's, between this. I'm performing like 3, 4, 5 times a week. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is insanity. Like, I never thought when I was thinking about what it's like to be a magician, I was like, oh, you know, I mean, I guess it's got to be 90% the booking and 90%, and maybe down the line that's what it will be when I'm there. But I'm just impressed that there's enough venues and stages right now that I can perform 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, and make a living 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week.
I currently have 3 paid gigs this summer, and all I did to get them was tell people I'm a magician. Like, I didn't do fucking anything. I didn't ask anyone. Someone's just like, hey, you do magic, you want to do this thing? And I was like, yeah, I'm glad I met you. Like, that was it. That was it. So, like, I'm just imagining if I put in the hustle, you know what I mean? Like, I could actually do this.
Here's advice for anybody who's listening. So, don't do what I've done, because I'm an idiot. I've had all the luxuries in the world. Manager since I was a kid who looks after all my bookings. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to book airfare. And I've not created nearly enough work. Like, if you get into the position where you have work, like you say, like you just put it out there and it comes to you, it is your duty and responsibility, which I am clearly shirking, to create new stuff, as much of it as you can. Right. So like, once the ball does get rolling, yeah, like more time should be spent on creating.
Yeah, once you actually are getting gigs and you have that freedom to like do whatever you want, don't just do the fucking egg bag again. You know what
correct.
I mean?
And then it's also why I noticed this when I did Fool Us, like a piece that where all the jokes and stuff are mine. All the jokes are mine. A lot of confidence attached to that because it's all mine, and I've worked out blocking bits and other things. So going into television, you have far less stress,
right?
Because you're like, it's all mine. Whereas if you go on doing the egg bag and you're like, oh, am I doing so and so's joke?
Yeah.
Then you misstep, you feel uncomfortable. It's weird, right? So the more original you can be, the better. It aids you down the line.
And again, I mean, because we're talking about putting together a show, you know, like. It's almost, I was talking to Train about this earlier this week. I was talking about adding a new trick to my show. And he said, don't add that trick, a specific one I was talking about. I said, why not? And he said, because you can, and everyone's doing it, and it's easy. And it's going to be a 10-minute addition to your show that you can do that other people have also done. And it's just, if you're going to add another piece to your show, and right now you're looking to add material to your show, why add that?
That's already there if you need it. That's
why try to workshop that when you could workshop something new and interesting and your own and fun and whatever? And
you'll get no respect from other acts by doing stock. And you know what? I always tell this story only because John Wing and I are close friends now. So, but I've known John for a very long time from television, like because I used to watch The Tonight Show all the time. So like 3 of them with Carson. I was like, this is the guy. So now we're talking like 15 years ago was my first time I met him, maybe, or even longer. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm on a cruise ship and John Wing is there. He's the comic, I'm the magician. And it's etiquette to come see everybody else's show on a cruise ship. So I'm like, oh my God, Wing is going to be there. So he's sitting in the wing. he's sitting in the balcony on stage right. And I do my act and I get in my closer. And at that time, it was like, it's a mentalism thing I had at my closer. And I used to do that stupid, you know, the baby thing. You write no,
and
then there's the stick animal thing.
Yeah.
And so I get into it. So I'm killing, like, boom, 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 all the stuff that's mine. And then I get into the baby thing, and I see Wing stand up and leave. I'm like, fuck, somebody who I actually really wanted to impress. And afterwards at dinner, he's like, I fucking hate that. It's awful to watch. It made me cringe. I had to leave. I'm like, but you didn't see my closer. It's the best thing in my act. And he's like, nope.
Sorry, yeah.
Couldn't get through it.
So just goes. It just goes to. I'm finicky all the time. It just goes to show you, like,
we all are.
working on stuff that's yours is better than.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like when Copperfield was always on, and then everybody would do like Misled because Copperfield. Yeah. Once somebody like that does it, don't do it.
And now, I mean, the like things become in the magic community very quickly, like mentalism and Rubik's Cube tricks. And someone recently posted somewhere. I loved it. They were like, I think it was the Jerks. He was like, Rubik's Cube magic has become incredibly popular. However, Rubik's Cubes are still not. So if you're going to do a Rubik's Cube trick, please have a reason why you're bringing out an ancient toy that nobody cares about.
Is it ancient? They were popular when I was a kid.
But
I'm old now.
But I thought that was really funny.
Bill Abbott had the funniest line on Facebook. Did you see it? Bill Abbott is Bill Abbott's like hawking some new show he's doing. And it's like tagline. This is a poster. Tagline, and no Rubik's Cubes in the show. It might be fucking awesome.
Or someone else posted, I forget what it was. It was like 4.6 quintillion is the number of magicians doing Rubik's Cube tricks.
Yeah. It's so,
I thought it was really good.
And Mike Close told me something really, because I'm not really attached to the selling of magic or anything. He goes, I guess maybe he's talking about Penguin or whomever. I don't know who his friends are down there. But it was really interesting. He goes, average turnaround on a trick now, 45 days. You put it out, it's super hot, you got 45 days, and then it's gone. And
holy shit.
And once he told me that, because I bought something from Richard Sanders, a piece that I thought was really good, and it was hot. I'm like, I'm going to put this in the drawer for a year or two until it goes away, and then I can start working on it. It was gone in a month. No one heard about it. And I'm like, Mike's right. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
So that's the internet doing that, I think, to us, right?
It's a lot of material, and it goes to show that, like, I mean, there's an excess of material.
Someone told me there's more magic books, or the number
than
one
of all other,
it's cookbooks first in the world, and then magic books. Like, is that even possible?
I think it is. I think it is. Like
that's too many card tricks.
Well, I mean, compare how many books there are about magic to how many books there are about comedy. I mean, like, seems like every magician writes a book when they're and never mind that. Yeah. But like, that's also true. But like.
Yeah.
Every magician, like, they do well, they create all their magic, and then they publish it in a book. That's not true for every comedian. That's not true for every actor.
Yeah,
they don't want to tell
it. They've been doing the same thing for 30 years, right?
Nobody wants to reveal it. Obviously, it's not that cut and dry, but I think there's a lot.
But, like, science? Like...
No, I think it was art forms, I think. I don't think it trumps science.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's crazy.
But also, well, science is different. Like, I want to spread the word. If I come up with a cure for cancer, all of you take it.
Yeah, I'll share that.
Yeah, that's true.
But
all these
guys, well, I was having drinks after the taping at that Foolish thing, and the universal comment was, from the people I was drinking with, was, I have to shelf this material or retire it entirely, because once it's on TV, every magician will start doing it. And I was like, isn't that interesting? It's like you put it on TV or in a book, and then you have to retire it because
it's out.
It's out, man. Everyone and their mother's going to do it. So you might have spent 15 years working on that closer. You do it on TV, and then you're hooped.
Yeah, that was kind of similar to what Matthew Beesh said, where he was like, I hold on to material until I feel like either people are going to start doing it without me releasing it, or I'm just done with it. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to put it out so that I have my name on it, and that's it. It's done. It's out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because we sort of came to two separate opposing conclusions through the same thing. And one is that, you know, what it takes is a good 1 hour show, and that's what you're going for. And the other is never stop creating new material because you know, when you
but
do it, it gets retired.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Right. And that was what I was about to say, which is that, you know, like, you're almost feeding your amazing 1 hour show with your creativity forever. And that show is gonna, I mean, in the beginning of the days, you're gonna sub in full tricks. Full 20 or 30 percentages of the show is gonna go in and out. But then later, it's only gonna be 2% that change. It's gonna be jokes that, you know what I mean? It's gonna be.
Well, also, like, comics will often, and I tried to do this before my child, you take your closer. And when you've written something new that you like, you move your closer to the opening, and now you have to start working on a new closer. Right? And then, like, new material is always surrounded by two strong pieces to bookend it, obviously. But then once it gets to be a thing on its own, then, you know, everything gets moved down like the Jenga logs, right?
Right.
And it's like, that's what you should do with your 1 hour. And then, then eventually it just becomes...
You have a gold mine of an hour, exactly, because it's all the best.
And like Steve Martin always says, you know, be so good they can't ignore you.
Right.
It's the best advice ever. Because, I'm not. But like, there are people who are really good, and like you know,
you can't ignore them.
You can't,
there you go.
You can't. Like, how do you ignore David Williams?
Right.
You can't. He's too good.
Right. I joke about it all the time. One of the things I wrote about in this post is that, like, you know, about how you should really know who your audience is before you're performing, and I gave this whole description about that, and I go, but then again, I would put David Williams in front of any audience, magician, non-magician, drunk, not drunk, old, young, and
but he's the unicorn.
And so that was the thing, is like, I used to think of people like him and say, I need to be that well-rounded. And now I'm like, You know, that's a guy who's the best of the best of the best. Let me be sure that I can be amazing with my audience, and then I'll graduate to another audience.
Also, I feel like the reason I've been able to last this long, though, is because I've specialized only corporate, really.
Right.
Like, I don't... And then I was never happier. It was when I stopped doing close-up and I stopped doing kid shows. And then also, more respect. Everything got better, specialized. Look at David Kay, right? He's the kids guy.
Yeah.
But that's it. He's the... Madonna wants the guy. That's the guy.
Yeah.
Be the guy.
Right? 100%. And one of the things we learned is that, you know, I mean, first of all...
I'm a whore. Finding a niche. Anybody. Do whatever. If you have my... You meet my price, I will fly
to your... Whatever you want.
I will fly to your First Nations community and work in the dirt. Wherever you want, I'm there.
I'm a specialized performer. What I mean by that is a specialized price.
That's right. No job is too big, no fee is too big.
Or there's a new thing we've been going around with Mark and I, which is that, what's my price? I'll put it this way. Your highest... is my lowest.
Just, you know what? Consistency in price, though, is so important with agents. Like, man, do not be the guy who's like $3,500 for one guy and $1,000 for another, because word will get out and it'll burn you.
Right.
Be consistent. As much as I joke around about it, actually be consistent about that, because, boy, agents get pissed off.
That's a good piece of advice, especially for, you know, the climb where you suddenly realize you can charge more. You know, you have to like unanimously decide to charge more. You can't start bing, bing.
Yeah, you really, and then
you know, it's like
it's like charging more is just confidence. And you know what I learned to do that? Yeah, you have to realize you're good. Like you have to be good. But I saw U2 on this interview, and Bono's being interviewed by, I think, like Peter Mansbridge or something in Canada. And he goes, "So what? Why are you guys so great compared to these other bands? What is it about U2 that's made you guys so great?" And he goes, like, to Bono's credit, humble enough to go, well, the only difference between us and the garage band is we have a recording contract. There's probably a million better bands than us, he says. And I'm like, yeah, it is kind of true. At some point, you just got to go, well, I'm going to take that money.
Yeah, right.
And that's sort of...
If I know I can do the job, I'm... Yeah.
You know? I mean, look at the top, like...
Self-awareness is key. Remember, self-awareness is key.
Right. It's not just confidence, it's self-awareness.
Self-awareness, yeah. Because if you suck... I just saw a magic show in Toronto, and they thought they were great.
Right.
And it was... My eyes bled.
Yeah.
I go, well, I question my existence.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you gotta be. But you know what I mean? Like, I think the Bono thing makes sense a little bit. Like,
I mean, one of the things that we preach on this podcast is just to, like, do something with the magic, because... I mean, like you're jokingly saying, but like, you're doing great as a performer, but you're not the world's best entertainer, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, there's so many people listening to this podcast who are not taking action in getting booked or being creative or all of these fun things, because they're like, look at all these amazing people that are doing this. How could I possibly live up to it? But just start, I mean, start. The only difference between you and the other one is you have a recording contract.
Yeah, like, you can't be Michael Jordan or Flaubert. Or you know what I mean? Or Einstein. Like, it's going to be... The chances of that are so low. Like, just be yourself. And then it'll move from there.
Yeah. And one of the things that, I mean, we keep revisiting is, you know, the meshing between who you are and the things that really excite you about the world and your magic is what makes you unique and special and hireable and whatever. And
like, I just realized... So, I've always tried to, like, create promotional material to... Yeah. For my audience, like, or for my, you know, people who hire me.
Yeah.
And then just this week, I was like, you know what? I love Saul Bass. I'm a big fan of
Saul Bass. I saw the thing that
you... Yeah, and I had a designer make me something in the style of Saul Bass. It's my favorite piece of promo. And then, thank you. And then all the agents are like, this is great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, why didn't I just listen to myself? Instead of trying to go up your ass, I should have just, you know, done what
exactly,
I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah, do what you like.
Exactly what I planned for. So I think we're wrapping up near the end of the episode. One of the things that we do when we get to the end of the episode is, because we spoke for about an hour, people are doing, I don't know, anything from washing dishes to driving their cars. They
hopefully
might not
practicing their pass.
Yeah,
because that's the rule. Just cards away.
Cards away, please. Thank you. There's a lot of pieces of information. So we sort of go around and we take one sort of real take-home piece from the interview that... Someone's to go do something, one thing actionable, or take one thing home. That would be it. For me, I think this is one of the first times that we really brushed on the idea of endlessly creating material for your show. Yeah. And I think that it's
produce.
Yeah, I think it makes such an impact, and I think it's the secret to having great material is coming up with 10 times what you use.
I was just going to say, like, I always go produce, and you know what? Now, so I've not produce as much as I should. And if you're younger, do that, because I'm 42 now, and I'm filled with regret for wasting lots of years
doing the same material or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm like, I mean, you have to do the same material to get good at it, but I didn't create nearly enough, and it's like always in the back of my head, and I'm pissed off, and I'm slightly embarrassed about it, which feeds my self-hate. But like, yeah, like seriously, produce, and you know what? It doesn't matter if it's going to be shit. Right. Everything is going to be shit in the beginning.
It all sucks.
Yeah, everything sucks.
It all sucks, which is the thing you like.
Yeah, like, you know, Joy Division writes a song, it's not good in the beginning. You know, nobody writes... No. Karen Kane's first time on stage isn't any good. So, yeah, just keep producing stuff, man. So that is the big takeaway. I would say produce.
Tyler, for you?
I was really happy to address the self-hatred in our community, to be honest. I think that if you're sitting at home and you don't fucking like who you are and don't have confidence, know you're not alone and know it's okay.
Write to me. Yeah. I will make you feel better. Because I can
commiserate.
I don't know. It was kind of... It's like when you hear something negative like that, it's uplifting because you're like, oh shit, we're all fucking bailing water, just fucking trying to
wake up every day. Yeah, you always pick yourself apart. So, always, man.
Produce, but also look out for yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, look after your mental health, man, because it'll wear away on
you. And quit fucking smoking if you do. So
no one likes a quitter, man.
And do you have any take-home points? I know we sort of...
Yeah, produce. Be nice to everyone. Like, I can't begin to say how important that is. And do what you like. Because I used to compromise a lot on stuff. And I'm like, I wish I'd done more of what I think is funny, what I like. So do what you like. Be selfish. Smoke them if you got them.
I think that's amazing advice. And I think it is a very fantastic episode. Last thing. Right now, there's at least a million magicians listening at home. Is there anything that you want to tell them? Anything from a PSA to a plug of a show to a word of warning to a word of hatred? Anything you like?
Stop making those awful comments on my Fool Us YouTube thing because it's driving me to kill myself. Please. The worst magician ever? Really? Really? Fucking the worst? And if I am the worst, is that a crime? Like, can you please direct this level of hatred towards fucking politicians? Not to somebody doing some shitty psychometry thing on Fool Us. Fuck, man. Let it go. Fuck. Like, I'm lucky I got this show. Just be happy for me. And, I feel like... just be nice to everyone.
just like that's, I just did.
That's the thing. Anyways, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Episode. Let's go have a smoke.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's do it.
And of course, big thank you to everybody at home for listening. And I think this was more than ever an episode where you can remember that it's not all about the tricks. It's all about everything else. You know, the comedy, the writing, the creating of it, all that fun stuff. And thank you guys for listening and tuning in. See you next Thursday.
Thank you.
Take care.
Peace.
Well, there you go. That is 60 episodes, 6-0, of Discourse in Magic. One last time, a reminder that if you're going to be in or near or around New York on Wednesday, May 31st, I'm going to be there and we're doing a meetup. So stay tuned on Facebook and or Insta for where that is. Otherwise, I just want to give a quick shout out to my Epic Turtle on Reddit for shouting out Discourse and Magic. Other than that, I'll either see you Wednesday in New York or you'll hear me Thursday on episode 61. Later!